to Kayak Fishing the Wild West on your one stop, your best stop for Kayak Fishing Radio, kayakfishingradio.com. I'm your host, Dennis Spike from kayakfishing.com, joined by Northwest Kayak Fishing expert and co-host Isaac the Nothing Miller at the helm in Portland, Oregon. How you doing, Isaac?
I'm doing very well. How you doing?
I'm doing great. I wanted to let listeners go. We've got a round panel of expert kayak anglers who can answer all your questions. And there's also a blog. Tune in to Kayak Fishing or log on to kayakfishingradio.com. I want to remind listeners that although the show is on the West Coast and we have a lot to talk about, all of a sudden the fishery has opened up. We welcome all your questions and comments about the sport from everywhere, and we want to hear from you. Log on to the chat room at kayakfishingradio.com or call the switchboard, and we'll put you live on the air, so to speak, anyway.
There you go.
Isaac, give me a report. Where'd you fish? When'd you fish?
Oh,
what'd you
catch? I went out on Tuesday. There was a group of us. There was seven of us total, if my head count was right. Went out of Depot Bay, Oregon, the world's smallest harbor in the world.
And where is that in relation to a city somebody might be familiar with?
Oh, wow. You know, it's smack dab in the middle of the Oregon coast.
Right on the Oregon coast. Nice.
Yeah, it's just north of Newport, Oregon. And
There you go.
Yeah,
everybody
pretty
knows where Newport
straight
is.
Straight west from Eugene.
Uh-huh.
So.
That is center of the state.
Great little town. Yep. Great little town. Great little harbor. It's not tidally influenced, so there's no real bar crossing to worry about.
Nice.
On rough days. There's no surf to worry about. You know, you've got the usual swells, and that's it.
And so, you're used to having to go for coastal fishing. Generally, you're going out and hitting the waves and crashing through surf to get out to the kelp fields.
Yeah, I love fishing just about a half hour north of there in Pacific City. And, yeah, that is a surf
launch. A whole different entry into the water.
It is.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like I said, Depot Bay, I mean, it's like paddling out of a lake into the ocean. It's perfectly
flat.
The
waves in Malibu are half the size, but there's no protected launch. So you're always going through the waves. And it's funny, you have it up there at Depot Bay. We've got several little private campgrounds, state campgrounds, that offer finger coves.
Yeah.
They don't see much of the tide either. But unless the swell is directly pointed towards the opening, it's an easy in and out. And even Fort Ross doesn't offer that kind of protection. Just up the hill from that, Ocean Cove is a nice little finger cove.
Nice.
In California. So you went fishing, you had good conditions, huh?
Oh, man, it was gorgeous. We had about a 4-foot swell all day, and bright, sunny skies, crisp 35 degrees at launch. But, man, I'll tell you what, it was just gorgeous out there.
It sure does feel warmer on the water once that sun starts hitting you.
That it does.
I had the same experience on Tuesday. We hooked up at Timber Cove. And actually, I was working with a client and hooked up with some other guys from the NCKA site. And they got out probably an hour and a half before us. The difference a day of work makes, and had big, beautiful stringers, giant lings. Looked like they were pushing 15, 20 pounds, and really nice quality rockfish.
Nice. Yeah, we didn't have a whole lot of rockfish caught. Like I said, there were seven of us out there.
It's thick with ling cod up there, isn't it?
Yeah. I didn't hook up a single rockfish. A good number of ling cod, cabazon, which are out of season, and an awesome little sculpin that I just love. The Irish Lord.
Is it a delicious little sculpin?
You know what? I have never kept one.
And that one goes back, huh?
Every time. You know, I didn't. I actually threw back all the ling cod this week, too. I had three or four that were keeper size, well over 22 inches.
Nice.
You know, I'm just like,
Yeah, they're still young fish.
They're still young, you know, and I'm just like, eh, I don't
sounds
feel
like you didn't need any fish this week, Isaac.
I didn't. I needed to fish, not to fish. I needed to fishing.
Nice.
And it was a great time out there. Biggest fish brought in was 30 inches, big 30-inch ling cod. That was picked up by a Northwest kayak angler, goes by the username of Jammer. So
Jammer? Sweet.
Yep.
So what do you think that fish weighed in at?
That was 9.1 pounds.
And that was his ling?
That was his ling cod. We had another guy, Noah, that picked up a 27-inch cabazon. Unfortunately, cabazon is closed currently.
Nonetheless, fish of a lifetime as far as I'm concerned.
27-inch, that was his first cabazon ever.
That's
so
bigger than a lot of halibut stuff,
yeah. And at 27 inches, I put that around 10, maybe 11 pounds.
Wow, wow. Great. I saw one like that this week. Saw one like that. It wasn't quite as long or heavy. The reports down here, in contrast, and for listeners, you have to understand, on the North Coast, on the Eastern Pacific, in December, you expect to go out there and not to be able to get anywhere near the water with your kayak. But we had a window of opportunity where there weren't any significant storms out in the Pacific. There wasn't significant wind events going on. There was more of a high pressure that built up and some wind events further in, onshore. But just beautiful, and no swell. It was just beautiful conditions. Your 3 to 4 foot up there, in contrast, was about 1 to 2 down here, about half of the swell you had. And we consider if it's anything under 6, it's a fishable day.
Yeah.
So when we see 1 to 2, it's hard to see the swell on the water.
Yeah.
It's just Lake Pacific. And the counts down here have been spectacular, fishing both to the west of the Sonoma coast and the Mendocino County coast. Anglers have had 20 and 25 ling cod a day, legal fish. And they're only taking one or two if they're taken, so all the rest of those fish are getting returned. You know, good argument for barbless fishing there, too. Easier to release those ling cods.
That they are. You know, those jigs have some big barbs on them.
They do. You know, they got a tough mouth, but still, just food for thought. And but some really great, again, some big cabazons too. It's the fish are spawning. Vermilion
exactly.
Rockfish, coppers, big fish in the 8 pound pushing 10 pound range. And it's just great. And really what I wanted to say, I mentioned it last night on Chip Show, and this is testimony to, you know, with everything that's going on with protected areas and environmental causes making change within fisheries and fishery management and not good change. Here we've got a situation in California where not only are we having a great season in December, but we're having a season in December, which we haven't had in the 5 years that I've been here. And it's testimony to California's ability to move forward and progress into sustainably managed fisheries. So I'm proud to be fishing in December. That just says what we've done in the past 5-6 years to get back into having more months open to fish for these species without doing any detrimental impact to the fishery. So it excites me. I like that stuff. The crabbing is still strong around here. Everybody's complaining about, oh, the counts are dropping off because the commercials are taking a lot of crabs. I got to tell you, my off-the-cuff position on that is that the commercial impact doesn't do anything to the sport impact. The crabs quit. They slowed down before the commercials agreed to go fishing, and it's exactly the same as the last years I've done it. So I don't think that's such a big deal. The crab crawl, it's like an insect infestation in somebody's neighborhood. It moves around.
Yep,
and,
exactly.
What's that?
I say, yeah, they move around quite a bit.
I think they do, you know. Sometimes I think I put my pots 10 feet off the mark, and there were probably hundreds of crabs walking 10 feet or 10 yards away who didn't turn in, whether it was current or attitude of the animal or whatever. But again, I everybody I hear complaining is not fishing the five pots that they could be fishing. How many are you allowed to fish in Oregon?
Two.
See, you guys have got some pretty strict...
Two? Maybe it's three. What
you
it?
Guys have got some pretty strict it? Restrictions, and it surprises me because you don't have a lot of recreational pressure on the Oregon coast, do you?
There is. Saltwater, not so... Or, I'm sorry, out in the ocean, not so
yeah,
much...
Yeah, for crabbing and fishing.
A lot in the tidal bays. A lot in the tidal bays.
Oh, do you?
Yeah, there's... Yeah. I mean, there's... my favorite place being Tillamook Bay. There's a small section that actually called Crab Harbor.
Really?
Guess why they call it that?
Because it loads up, baby.
Yeah, you can walk across it on the crab floats.
Wow. They tell us at Albion, which is Mendocino County, southern end of Mendocino County, that you can throw your pots right off the rocks, you know, on the waterway going out to the mouth there. And that the crabs crawl through that whole thing. It's
sure.
just kind of far to go, you know, when there's closer crabbing. We're allowed to put five pots in the water in California. You're allowed to put five pots per person or a maximum of 10 per vessel.
Huh.
So, yeah, so when I hear most people complaining, oh, I didn't get my limit of 10, and we're allowed to keep 10.
We got a dozen.
That's even better.
Yeah.
But when you hear people complaining, you know, I ask them, how many pots did you put out? They're only putting out two or three. And I think if it gets slow like that, you shouldn't start complaining unless you're fishing your allotted string of gear.
Right.
So.
I can concur with that, except, you know, I've had plenty of limits just fishing two pots.
I had all of last season and the better part of this season fishing two pots, and I just added one today. One of the local ranchers pulled up to Michelle's saloon and said, I got something for you, and pulled out of the back of the truck a mini circular crab trap. And there was a local guy here making them, and he went up to him and he said, I don't want to pull these heavy pots up anymore. I guess he was pulling by hand. He goes, will you make me one small one? And it's only got one trap door, and the half of the top opens up for the lid. But it's a nice little stainless pot, and it's doing its first soak probably in 25 or 30 years right now.
Nice. Nice.
I'm walking out from Tuesday's fishing, walking down to the beach with, I think, between me and the client, we took 8 fish and released as many or more. And I'm walking down to the beach to put them back, the carcasses back in the water. I smacked myself in the head. I immediately put them back in the truck, and now they're soaking as crab bait right now. So I'm using the oyster bags, if I haven't mentioned it. The bags that oysters come in, the mesh net bags.
Yeah, those
they're
are
inexpensive
great.
If you can get a hold of them, and they are really, really effective. You can get one or two uses out of them. And it holds the bait in the crab pot for a really long time and does something that I think is really important. It allows the crabs to eat enough to keep them there without stealing all your bait.
Yep. You know, and a good place to get those, any grocery store, go to the produce department.
That's a worthy tip, Isaac. That's a good, good tip.
Also, check with the seafood cooks because they've got very similar bags that clams and mussels and oysters come in.
Any of the restaurants, too. They're throwing those bags away. And it's usually a dishwasher or a restaurant worker, a kitchen worker, who takes them out of the bags. And I know that by bringing my guy a few crabs and a fish here and there, those bags do not get thrown in the garbage.
Yep. They're good. Good, good.
These are all good tips for the citizen angler, I tell you.
There you go. So,
the rockfish season, Isaac. You grew up in California, is that right?
No, I grew up in Seattle.
In Seattle, in the Northwest is what I meant. Sorry, I forgot there were two other states. you know, when we were kids, the rockfish fishery, going out and catching lingcod, cabazon, and 20 different species of rockfish, bright red, what people call rock cod. This was a year-round fishery. It was something you could do 12 months a year, and when you had something better, it was considered a trash fishery. And I know in Southern California where you have the calico bass and the sand bass, these are the kelp basses. And it's a saltwater bass that can get up to 10 pounds or more, rarely does anymore, overfished real heavy in the 70s, impacted by pollution, probably impacted by development and El Ninos and everything else. And it's a sport-only fish, but there's some concern being raised about their numbers. And I think it was the depletion of sport fish, like tuna, albacore, yellowtail, the bass, barracuda, and bonita, stuff that, you know, during the 40s and 50s was in the water all the time. And these species are greatly depleted to where some years we don't even have an albacore season. And I think, you know, depletion and natural cycle go hand in hand and work against us on that part. But I think the rockfish season or the fondness for the rockfish fishery came about by some lure makers and entrepreneurs who were way into it and made a jig. One example is the guy who invented Jack's jigs. Did you ever hear that one?
That does sound familiar.
It was one of the first jigs they made just for targeting rockfish, and it's a lead jig painted in the colors of all the other rockfish. So the guy had his theory, and this is mad fishing talk we got going here. The guy had his theory that these fish are both cannibalistic and predatory and that they ate other rockfishes. So if you made the baits in the color of rockfishes, if you fish three or four of them a day, you'll figure out which one is getting bit. And it was a good system. He also had a system because he developed everything he knew fishing on party boats out of Morro Bay and Half Moon Bay, Santa Barbara, all the Central and Southern California coast. And that's where he developed his lures. And the boat set up for rock fishing always drifted. And guys would get on the far end of the boat and, you know, drift with the current, come up underneath them. Well, he started fishing by casting into the drift and then hopping the lure back once it hit the bottom as it came to the boat, and he found that he lost less gear. And you know how it is when you're drifting and you hit a rock. It's easier on a kayak because you can paddle up against it, but you snag a rock or a thick plant on a drifting party boat, and that lure is gone. So, and I did an article on the guy, and I went out with him, and he taught me his theory about the jigs and the patterns. And again, have you ever heard of fish trap lures, the soft plastic swim baits?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah?
Yes.
Sorry, I'm having a little communication issue here, a little sound issue. Anyway, Barry, who developed fish trap, had a similar kind of concept. So I had heard it before. So he's telling me about that with the rockfish lures and then his technique. And I got to tell you, I watched everybody on the other side of the boat lose a lot of gear and a lot of fish. And this guy and I fishing the empty side of the boat, drifting, you know, fishing into the drift, caught a lot more rockfish. I've never tried it on the kayak. I make a few casts that way once in a while, but I never dedicated myself to it because on the kayak, you can just paddle over to where you got stuck, jig that thing up and down, and hopefully you get it back. Right. And he told me that the times you don't get a lure back, especially when you're fishing over rocky structure, is when that hook gets into a hole in the rock. That's what this guy believes.
Right.
And from feel, I don't know how far off he is. I learned a lot from fishing with that guy, and you know, everybody's theory for why their lure works or why their technique for fishing works can all be taken with a grain of salt until you see the results. And Isaac, I don't mean to be cutting off anything else you're saying, but when I get into full rant mood, I wanted to talk one more thing about results, and then I'll let you pick it up. I was doing a fishing show in Minnesota. And I think what gets me onto this rant is it doesn't matter what lure, what technique, what bait. You know, there are probably 50 or 100 things that are basic to fishing anywhere that have worked for the last 50 and 100 years, and that is the should be the foundation for every fisherman. But there are a few things that I've noticed, like there are Old Faithful jigs and lures. There's 5 or 6 that every fisherman gets in his lifetime that's always in his box, whether it's freshwater or salt and whatever the conditions might be. And for me, a couple of those are going to be crocodiles in prism. You know crocodile spoons, right?
Oh, yeah.
From the Great Northwest. It's funny, I talk to people around the country who've never heard of it. And also in the green mackerel and blue mackerel patterns. These are, if I ever had to be deserted with one lure, it would be a dozen crocodiles. Also scampies for fish in the eastern Pacific, and I don't care if you're fishing white sea bass or rockfish or halibut. Scampies are great lures. And so about, I don't know, 6-7 years ago, I'm working a fishing show in Minneapolis, Minnesota. And my first time there, 6-day show in January. Do you know how cold it is in Minneapolis in January? It's like the movie Fargo.
But it's a dry cold.
It is ice fishing cold. And these are some of the most serious outdoorsmen I've ever come across at a fishing show. I guess if you're stuck indoors for 6 months. By the way, they've got the city tied together with indoor walkways, so you don't have to go out. You can do your shopping, your convention going, do everything. Go to the malls and never have to go outside except getting out of your car. Heck, they got indoor parking too. All the modern conveniences. I see at this fishing show that Babe Winkleman is speaking one day only. And man, did I get excited. So I told everybody I was working with at the booth that I won't be available for these couple hours. I got to go listen to Babe Winkleman. And you are familiar with him, aren't you? Babe Winkleman had 7 different television shows on at one time.
I've run into
But he has brought a lot of people into the sport of fishing. And it's a good family show. Anyway, I get up there in the front row, and I'm a big nobody. Nobody in that room knew who I was. Babe Winkleman never heard of me before. And all of a sudden he starts talking about the banjo minnow. And he's doing a slide presentation, and I'm like, what the? And he says, I am not sponsored by these people. I don't even know them. And he goes on to tell the story about how several years earlier, and he had seen it on TV like all of us. Are you familiar with the banjo minnow?
Oh, absolutely.
It is a lure that catches fish. And Babe Winkleman worked it into his show presentation because he was talking about the Old Faithful lures, the stuff that you put in the box, and he had just found this one within the last couple of years. And what had happened, a guy several years earlier had said, you got to try this lure, you won't believe it, blah, 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 blah. And then it happened again where a guy threw a bag of 25 at him, or took 2 bags of 25 in different colors. And, you know, Babe Winkleman, I mean, you all imagine that he's got a warehouse full of stuff people have handed him. And whether it was on the whether he does or not, it was on the shelf. He got into a situation where he wasn't catching fish, and he absolutely needed to catch fish. And a guy had just called him, a buddy of his, telling him about the banjo minnow. And he ended up, I think he ended up getting a little endorsement for it. But he was talking about this, and it really is. There are a handful of lures, and usually you discover them. The rooster tail, the warden rooster tail, is something, you know, half of them come from what you grow up with, and the other half come from what you learn about. But and I learned rooster tails work pretty good in salt water, too.
They do?
They do indeed, whether you're making bait or catching fish. It really is amazing. So thanks for letting me chew your ear off there, Isaac,
hey,
and listeners. Have you got a chat room fired up there?
It's up and running. We don't have anybody in there right now.
No action at all.
To mention, we do have the chat room. So if you're listening to us on the internet you're either on kayakfishingradio.com or you're on blogspotradio.com. There is a chat room. You can sign up so we can see you. You can start chat with us. If you've got any questions, ask them in the chat room. Any comments, you can word them out in the chat room. We'll see them. We can relay them on the air. Alternatively, you can give us a call anytime you want. 714-816-4727.
December is a real fishy time. And back in the day before I was in the kayak fishing business, when it was just me and my cousin going out, launching off the beach in Malibu, and, you know, we didn't even pay attention to what time of year it was. And several years later, he was getting ready to drywall the wall in his garage. And we had a habit of marking down great fish, just writing it down on a board pinned up on the wall. And when he went to drywall it, we realized that December, January, February, months where some years we can't even get near the water. We realized that some of those years when we were coming up kayak fishing in probably the late 80s, early 90s, we were getting windows of opportunity that if we could get on the water, we caught fish. And, you know, I've known the story that the further you go up the eastern Pacific, the worse it gets, the worse the conditions are. But the fact is, north or south, if you don't have storms brewing in the Pacific, there's not a lot of activity. You don't have the wind generating a wind swell and keeping you off the water. And you have an open season to fish. And I'll tell you the truth, even when you don't have an open season to fish, for the fish you want to fish for, I've seen some sand dabs on our coast that fillet into four beautiful fillets.
Nice.
Not sole sand dabs. And I'd be willing to go out with a sabiki to catch those guys, pull all but two hooks off of it.
Yum.
And a little strip of squid. But, yeah, if I could get a little bucket of sand dabs going, that's a good day of fishing.
And paddling, as far as I'm concerned. Eating too.
How do you buy those at market?
Cleaned, basically. They're,
so you're buying a bag of sand dab fillets.
Yeah, and by fillet, we mean pretty much just the whole thing. You still have the spine down. It's just
You're buying the whole fish.
Finless and headless.
Oh, there you go. Okay.
Pretty close to the whole fish. So
now, in those hoity-toity restaurants, the few that I've had the pleasure of having sand dabs in, it's always been served as a fillet. And big fillets. I've never gone into a restaurant and have them try to serve me the whole fish.
Okay.
Do you retain them when they come on board the kayak?
When I get them, yeah, you bet I do.
Yeah,
we don't have a whole lot of sand dabs here in Oregon. They are here. But we
thought it's prolific, huh?
Right, but we do have the sand dabs. We've got other bottom, other flounders, the starry flounder, the first that comes to mind. There's a few others, and they're
somebody
all
somebody could make a whole fishing career out of flat fishes alone.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the halibuts, the flounders, and we have turbots, don't we?
You do.
Further south?
Yeah.
And those are fish that all of the flatfish like to come into the bays and harbors, do their spawning. They get into the skinny water. They get it right up into the surf zone.
Yep.
You know, a lot of the tools, Isaac, that we've had in the past for checking the bite, we just don't have anymore. More and more newspapers, or I should say fewer and fewer newspapers, publish fish reports. Online information is hard to find in a lot of the areas that people want to access.
Yeah.
So,
you know, stepping back a little bit, you were talking about lures and what you're using out there in the salt water. And Tuesday, I got to try out a brand new lure, not even hit the market yet. And
is it rubber or iron?
It's iron.
We didn't even mention fish in the iron.
No, it's a big 8-ounce jig, jointed body, giant hammered Colorado blade. So it makes a ton of noise, a whole lot of flash.
What's a Colorado blade?
It's like a spinner blade.
Okay.
It's
got a lot of action in the water.
Really big, yeah. It's not allowed to spin because it is hardwired onto the body, but it's just allowed to just flap and clank and make a lot of noise. And it's something killer. I can't wait for this to hit.
It's a great lure, huh? And it's not too heavy for the kayak at a half a pound?
No, not at all.
Wow.
Not at all. No, I use them all the time. And
you know, I forgot to mention that those big fish those other guys caught were all on the iron.
Yep. I love
it. Of course, I went out and grabbed all the 2-ounce irons that I have. I'm going to feel a little undergunned tomorrow if I don't get hooked up. So is that somebody local making that lure?
It's Colorado, if I remember correctly.
Huh.
It's PK Lures.
PK?
PK.
Yeah,
they're
I've
known
heard of
mostly
them.
For their, you know, pike and musky lures, walleye lures. They got some great walleye lures too. But this new one, man, it's killer for saltwater. I'll tell you, I'm going to be getting more when they hit the market in 2012.
There's a lure that, talking about the scampies, there's a lure that I want to come out with in the future that has a color combination in the twin tail and a colored head. Lead head, and it's just a generic lure. I'll probably come out with it, you know, as my special lure, but it is special. I've caught the first 8 white sea bass I ever caught, both on a boat and a kayak, were on this lure. The first giant halibut I ever caught was on this lure, and it tears the rockfish apart, and the value of scampies. And we forget about fish in the iron. If you ever go to garage sales, you know, one of the things you want to ask for, have you got any tackle boxes? And a lot of times they don't pull them out. They're still sitting in the garage where they've been sitting forever. And if you look through those old boxes, I remember my grandpa's box. It had all the offshore stuff. It had all the rockfish stuff. Had all the barracuda and bass. And all the old names of tackle and lures. And that stuff worked. That stuff really worked. But the iron, they had a lot of iron in those boxes for fish and everything. Albacore lures, you know. And it just, you know, it was funny. I went out guiding a client the other day, and it's his first time fishing a kayak in the ocean. And he had done some river stuff before. And he's the guy's from South Carolina. He's a hunter, angler. His dad got him into it. And, you know, sometimes you wonder why they're coming out to guide with you when they got that much experience. But I guess it's just a shortcut, the whole process. And I didn't really bring much for iron, a couple of really light crocodiles. And we caught fish. We did good. He nailed a nice legal ling at the very end, and we had a lot of action. We both lost big fish. Didn't get hook sets, and got pulled into the kelp and just came unpinned. But it's just so exciting to be able to do this fishery. And like I was saying, it took over from a lot of the other fisheries, fishing for bass, fishing for barracuda, and became the high-end fishery that I think it should be, you know, a respectable fishery. Mm-hmm. So. What did you fish? Was that the only lure you fished the other day?
I did fish a scampi, a glow-in-the-dark scampi, which is, you know.
And down here, the darker colors were doing better than the brighter ones. Although I got bit on everything.
Yeah, I hooked up one fish right away and said, okay, I got a fish in the boat. Now I'm going to try this new PK panic that no one's ever seen before. See how it works. And it did phenomenal. So
started really whacking them. Well,
yeah,
that's
so
great.
That's the only two I used.
Yeah. And you know, putting together a box, it's funny. I mean, there's always the selection of, these are questions I get asked a lot, you know, how do I approach that fishery? And, you know, the lures that have worked, because very few people start kayak fishing who aren't already anglers. And what worked for them, whether they were bass fishermen or trout fishermen, sometimes you have to size it up in the salt. But along those lines, you know, the stuff that's always worked does work. And if you look at my box, there's always a selection of lead. There's always, sinkers. There's always a compartment of barrel swivels, quality barrel swivels, and then hooks, of course. And then when it comes to the lures, I might have 15 or 20 different lures in my Reach 2 box, my main box. But there's going to be five or six of them there that are always there. And diamond jigs.
Yes.
I mean, tell somebody who wants to fish our coast and doesn't have any clue to what they're doing. If they're on vacation, if they're, you know, if they live far from the coast, they're just renting a kayak. You go out there with a rod and a couple of scampies, a diamond jig. What else would you throw into that mix?
Shrimp flies.
You know, getting back to basics.
Yeah.
Getting back to basics. And as I'm picking through the shrimp flies the other day, I see one of these tackle companies has come out with, instead of a shrimp fly, they've got two of those rubber squids pinned on there.
Right.
And it might not catch fish, but it sold me with a flutter of my heart, man.
You know, I've run those. I've run those little squids.
Have they gotten bit?
They have, but I don't think they're as consistent as the good old-fashioned shrimp fly.
Or pinning a squid strip or a whole squid on that hook.
Or that works too, yeah.
Yeah. It just looked so good. So I thought what I'd do tomorrow is I'm going to fish one rod active in my hand, and I'm going to fish another rod dead sticked about 4 or 5 feet off the bottom.
Oh, you guys are cheating.
You call that cheating?
Two rods?
I call that legal. Perfectly legal. It's called dead sticking. You're only allowed to fish one rod at a time in Oregon?
That's right.
Wow.
Except for lakes. You can
Except
have two
for
in
the
a lake.
Here on the lake, you have to buy a permit for that second rod in California.
You do, yeah.
Same with you? Yeah.
Yep, $17.
I'm not a very good lake fisherman. I think that second rod's just going to get me into trouble. You know, double my confusion.
There you go.
I need some guidance there, Isaac.
You know what? What I do is I run a crankbait for bass on one rod, and I use a small Castmaster on the other rod for trout. And if I hook up with a fish, that's what I like, is I have one lure that sinks, the other one floats.
Is that Castmaster for trolling?
Oh, yeah. You can cast it, you can troll it, you can jig it.
Yeah, but you're trolling for trout on the lake with it?
Yeah, I'll troll for trout on the lake with the Castmaster.
Do you have kokanee populations up there?
Yes, we do.
You fish
the world
like
record kokanees in Oregon.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. See, these are what I consider undiscovered kayak fisheries, and they're great fisheries.
Mm-hmm.
You know, really, really lots of fun, lots of action. And mm-hmm. there's a couple lakes, Shavers, one of them. I think that might be around Kern County.
That's down south. Yeah,
that's down
still
south.
A lot closer to you. You got Whiskey Town.
Yeah.
That's on the other. And then further up, a little bit further, Shasta.
Yep, heading up towards Shasta.
Yeah, you got two great.
I've never had the opportunity. There's a Shasta at the kayakfishing.com forums. Knows all that stuff.
Yeah.
I need more time. I need more time to fish. Have you got any plans for getting back out on the water?
Not as of yet.
I'm pretty excited. The back holding up?
It is, you know, and that was the big thing. I was, what day was it? It was Monday. I was at my acupuncture on Monday. And I had a pretty rough few days leading up to that. And halfway through the session, I just kind of woke up on the table, and I didn't hurt at all. And I decided right then and there, I'm like, hey, if this holds up, I'm going fishing, you know. And sure enough, it did. I've had a great week. Everything's been doing awesome with the back. So,
well, that's a nice little testimony for acupuncture. And for listeners who don't know, I figured several years back that nobody with in my family with the last name of Spike had ever really taken the name to heart. So I went out and I got a degree in acupuncture and herbology. And that's what I was doing right before I got into the fishing business. And it's all about moving chi. That, you know, acupuncture is a real bad name for the Oriental medicine because it just says a lot about, you know, it brings out the needle phobia in all of us. But when I started fishing my kayak, when I was working back in the burn center, that was in Sherman Oaks, California, during the Richard Pryor days. I could tell you so many stories if it wasn't a fishing show. Back when I was working in the burn center, I hurt my back at a respiratory therapy party. And I had back problems. I was in my early 20s at the time, and I had back problems for years. And when I started fishing my kayak, I managed to fish at least four days a week. And then started riding a bicycle to get some lower body exercise. And I truly I give kayak fishing credit for healing my back. And healing is not a word that I use a lot. And I did have a couple of major episodes of back pain after I started. I had two issues. But I got to tell you, being able to fish a couple days a week and doing my daily exercise, which I didn't start for years after I fixed my back fishing a kayak. I truly credit kayak fishing for fishing my back. And you can't fish when it hurts, but if you can get those couple of days out, and I used to tell my patients when I was an acupuncturist to get an exercise, you know, an exercise bike, mm-hmm. and put it in front of the television and do 30 minutes of sitcom four times a week on that thing. And some of us really need to be Pavloved into doing our exercise.
Wow.
But it really goes a long way. So I hope you get a lot more fishing days in and feeling real good about it.
You know, we've got a unfortunately, I have to work tomorrow. I got a crazy busy day. If I didn't have to work tomorrow, I probably still couldn't go fishing. But heads up for anybody that's listening in the Portland area tomorrow, there are over a dozen kayak anglers. I think the last time I looked, like 15 kayaks meeting up at George Rogers Park in Lake Oswego for a day of catch and release sturgeon fishing.
Very cool.
Yeah.
And the sturgeon are a-chewing, according to what I'm reading.
That they are. That they are. There's going to be a lot of guys out there that know what they're doing. There's a lot of guys that are going out there for their first time to learn what they're doing. If you're at all interested and you're listening to the show, go. You're going to learn something.
That's exciting. You got that posted up on all the websites?
Yeah, we got that going on. It's all being coordinated through northwestkayakanglers.com.
Great. So, you know, there are a lot of people who listen to the radio shows, kayakfishingradio.com, after the fact, archiving those files.
Yep.
So they might be able to catch that in time, anybody listening tonight. I took a call. Are you familiar with the Southern California, the San Diego Sport Fishing Fleet?
Yeah. Right.
Well, I got a call from the owner of the XL.
Okay.
And he said he's doing a six-day trip, I would guess, down to Mexico. And it's a kayak fishing trip on the XL. This is like a five-star hotel.
Yeah.
And I'm really excited. I have no idea what it's all about. He just wanted to let me know he's doing it and get my 2 cents. So I'm going to give him a holler back. And that could be some exciting stuff. You know, it's been a long time since I've fished Mexican waters. And that's after fishing as a land-based angler down there for spanning a period over 10 years. And I haven't had much of a desire to go back, but I have had a desire to fish those waters. And a luxury sport fishing boat might be right up my alley.
Yeah, that would be a pretty nice trip.
It's been a long time since I've hooked up a Dorado. I've never hooked a Wahoo on my kayak, and they've mocked me. I've had Wahoo looking, staring me right in the face.
And
next to my kayak that I couldn't hook up.
The Dorado is my number one dream fish right there.
They are a very doable, a very fun, and extraordinarily exciting fish on the kayak.
Yep, and that's exactly why I want to do it.
And you will. And you will. You know, they do pretty good over in Hawaii, too.
They do. I've seen those guys.
And we've been looking at, you know, a lot of people have been telling me, coming back from Costa Rica, both people who live there and people who are just vacationing there, and coming back with the same comment. I've heard about Panama, too, that it gives them the feel that they used to get from going to Mexico.
Hmm.
And I like that.
Yeah.
You know, so who knows what I'm sure that tropical fishing is going to come back to me. I like fishing the Pacific. I can't wait till we get an albacore season again.
There you go.
You know, who is that? Eric up in Seattle is looking to do that trip. Have I got the name right, Eric?
No. Are you talking about the Mexico trip?
No.
Oh, the tuna trip.
Oh, everybody should wear name tags. There's somebody hot on Mothership in the Albacore. Eureka. It's Eureka, California.
Okay.
Crescent City in Eureka. It's one of the North Coast kayak fishing, NorCal.
Okay.
I need a chart here to get all my sights straight. Well, Isaac, what else have you got?
Is there anything else, really?
There's not a lot on the calendar for the few months coming up.
That was the big thing I wanted to talk about. You know, what we have coming up next here as far as fisheries go is the winter steelhead. Steelhead fishing, wintertime steelhead fishing is primarily, you're looking at the coastal rivers.
Right.
And with the lack of rain the last week and a half, the rivers are flat. So the moment it starts raining again, these rivers on the coast are going to be
flooded. They're going to swell right up.
And there's a lot of great places that kayak anglers have access to on these coastal rivers.
I was just going to ask. It creates some reason. Kayaks create new opportunities, don't they?
Absolutely. And there's, like I said, there's a lot of great rivers. They're well-known rivers for fishing winter steelhead. Places like the Nestucca, Nehalem, the Alsea, the Wilson, all of these rivers do have some great kayak fishable areas. And I actually have to find a website just before the show called the Tillamook Estuaries Partnership. And they have a Tillamook County Water Trail. And they have maps for kayakable sections of these rivers. There's a couple of them, you know, they are hitting, you know, class one whitewater. But that, for anybody that has a good experience on their kayak, they can handle, you know, class one rapids.
Sure.
Not a problem. But there's some great information. Like I said, that was the Tillamook Estuaries Partnership. It's TBNEP.org, Tillamook Bay. I don't remember the whole. But anybody else interested, check it out. Like I said, you can also find them on Facebook, Tillamook Estuaries Partnership, and find out what it takes to kayak fish some of these rivers.
I think you got me sold. I think we're going to have to take a little run up there. And we get this pretty much through the winter, don't we?
We do, yeah. The winter run steelhead, throughout December, it's best in January and February. And the good thing is that's something to do during the winter months.
It sure is, and it's a good destination for tourist anglers, too. I mean, steelhead on the kayak, you know, would that turns me on. And I'm sure I could pull it off here, but I'd rather do it with you and cut my teeth.
There you go.
And I've been around that area. I used to live in Klamath Falls.
Okay, yeah.
And so I know some of these rivers you're talking about and some of the accesses, too. And I remember seeing them going, oh, this must be the fishiest spot in the world.
Yeah.
But, we don't have the opportunity to fish for these fish as much. There's a lot more closure down here. So it makes
right.
it real attractive for the Californians to come north for steelhead kayak fishing.
Right.
So, yeah, we'll talk about that more. I look forward to it. You'll keep us posted on the reports.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, I think I'm going to get myself up at about 5 a.m. And because parking is at a premium, most of the great accesses on the Sonoma coast are closed for the winter now that Abalone is closed and they just can't afford to stay open. So there's going to be some pressure on fishing. So I think I'm going to get the early in and the early out tomorrow. Hopefully I'll be lucky and do well. And then I got to run back down the coast and pull those pots I got soaking now. It's going to be like a centerfold for a Mad magazine, 50 kayaks, 20 power boats, commercial guys going in and out of the harbor, and the water is, it looks like it's littered with buoys.
Well, I bet. So. You'll have to thank those commercial guys for me, because we've been buying their crab all week. So.
Is it coming from Bodega Bay?
It is, actually. Come
glad to hear it.
Bodega Bay.
Glad to hear it. You know, somebody asked me the other day what I thought about commercial fishing, and I said I'm all for it.
Yeah.
You know? And I think they were a little surprised at that answer. But, no, there's got to be a harmonious balance and communication and cooperation between sport recreational fishing and commercial fishing. And that's what our fisheries are leaning towards. Thanks for coming on board with me tonight, Isaac. I couldn't do it without you. I sure couldn't have tonight. I appreciate it.
It's my pleasure.
So, I want to thank everybody for listening in and for listening in on the archived show. If you ever have questions, listen every Friday night, Kayak Fishing the Wild West on kayakfishingradio.com. It's 5 p.m. Pacific time, 8 p.m. Eastern time. Dennis Spike and Isaac Miller just jabbering all the fishing we can. We hope you learned something from tonight's show. Hope you have a great fishy weekend, Isaac.
Hey, you do the same.
And everybody else. Be sure to tune in next week. Feel free to call and join our expert panel and pose a question or give us a report. We'll see you next week on Kayak Fishing the Wild West.
Thank you.